morning, this is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the August 11th, 2021 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this combined in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing guests and staff participants in this meeting, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask telephone participants to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. During the meeting, if anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, Acting General Counsel, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, Acting General Counsel. This meeting is being held in hybrid fashion with all members of the Credit Committee appearing in person in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act and specific RI Housing staff participating via teleconference. Members of the public may access the meeting in person or via teleconference according to their preference. In addition, members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions being taken. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Committee Chairman Orth will preside at today's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, whether you are in person or staff communicating via telephone, please state your name prior to speaking for the benefit of members of the public who may be listening in or accessing the recording at a later date. If applicable, please mute your telephone or computer to minimize any background noise. And now I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. Good morning, everyone. This is Kevin Orth. I'd now like to call the August 11th Credit Committee meeting to order. And I would like to ask Carol to conduct a roll call vote.
Thank you. Chairman Nicholas Ritzina.
Here.
Commissioner Kevin Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Liz Payne.
Here.
Staff of Rhode Island Housing. James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Premiano.
Here.
Ann Berman.
Here.
Jeff Swanson.
Here.
Milton Baxter.
Here.
Corinne Myers.
Here.
CJ Rotella.
Here.
Roll call is complete.
Thank you very much, Carol. Before we get into our agenda items, I would like to just say how pleased I am to be able to be in person and see everyone and interact. And I thank you for putting this together so we could be here today. And also, I'd like to congratulate Ann on being promoted to Director of Development. Very well deserved, and very, very happy that you're in this new position.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I look forward to working with you much more. On to the first agenda item is the recommendation for firm approval of financing for Braeburn Chatham Apartments located in Providence. And Milton Baxter, Real Estate Development Officer, will present this committee action.
Excuse me, Mr. Committee Chairman. The first committee action this morning is approval of the minutes of the previous credit committee meeting.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Corinne. All right. Back to number one, which is approval of the minutes of the credit committee meeting held on June 9th, 2021. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Seconded?
Second.
Motion has been brought and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. The ayes have it. Motion passes. Great. Well, let's now go on to item number two, which is recommendation for firm approval of financing for Braeburn Chatham Apartments, and Milton Baxter will present this.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everybody in person as well. The item before the committee for consideration today is recommendation for approval of firm commitment for Braeburn Chatham Apartments. This is a 4% acquisition rehab transaction, which features a back-to-back conduit loan with Citizens Bank as the conduit lender. The developer is Boulevard Capital from Los Angeles. They are combining two existing affordable housing projects into a single 4% LIHTC project, which will contain a total of 91 units. Braeburn, which was built in the 1970s, has 51 units in four buildings, and Chatham, which was built in the 1997, has 40 units in seven buildings. They're deploying a 4% low-income housing tax credit equity, which will equal about $9.3 million. They are also seeking approval of the tax-exempt private placement back-to-back loan. The total loan amount is $19.5 million, of which $13.25 million will be a permanent loan. They are also seeking approval for capital magnet fund for $500,000. Separately, they will be seeking a preservation loan approval from the Affordable Housing Trust, Red Island Housing's Affordable Housing Trust, for $490,000. The syndicator will be Boston Financial, and they are conducting, as part of this acquisition rehab, they're conducting a substantial rehabilitation of total rehabilitation will be about $7.3 million. To be clear, part of that is actually going to be used to repair some fire damage that occurred at the property. Back in mid-April of this year, there was a fire at the Chatham property, which affected 24 of the units there. 16 of those were substantially damaged by fire. So what has happened since there, our preliminary approval, was the purchase price was renegotiated, and the insurance proceeds will be assigned to the seller. And then the buyer will conduct all of the repairs as part of the rehab. The total rehab is $7.3 million, which is about $81,000 per unit. And that scope includes all new siding, all new roofing, all new windows. To the extent that there are common areas, so a lot of these are townhouse-style units, so there's not a lot of common space, but the common areas will be updated. And then the units will have a complete rehabilitation as well. All new kitchen cabinets, all new kitchen appliances, all new flooring, all new plumbing fixtures. These units are well-worn and certainly in need of this rehabilitation. And so we're looking forward to having a great project there to provide some really updated housing in a much needed area. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mel. A motion to approve the financing for Braeburn Chatham Apartments.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Great. Thank you. Any comments or questions about this transaction?
They didn't come to us. What would they do?
Well, because we're issuing the 4% tax.
The 4% conduit that makes it.
That's correct. So in order for them to get the low-income housing tax credits, they had to execute this back-to-back transaction so that they can get the equity for the transaction.
I don't have any questions myself. I would like to point out a new format in the presentation package here that the development group has been working on. I think it's keeps it nice and succinct, keys in, I think, on the important issues and facts. So we'd welcome any comments. I'm sure staff would as well. If you'd like to tweak it in any way, if there's some information you loved having before that might not be here, you know, please speak up. Any other comments or questions on this? Hearing none, I'd like to conduct a roll call vote, please. Do we go to Corinne for that?
Yes. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Braeburn Chatham Apartments in Providence, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Retsinas?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Corinne. I would now like to move on to committee action item number 3, which is the recommendation for authorization to issue the tax-exempt loan to support the redevelopment of Braeburn Chatham Apartments in the amount of $19,500,000. This is obviously the transaction we just discussed, but it's in a separate motion to approve of the issuance of the tax-exempt bonds. So may I have a motion to approve of this action?
So moved.
Second.
Second, great. Any comments or questions about this aspect of it? Okay. Hearing none, I'd like to request a roll call vote, please.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending authorization to issue a tax-exempt loan to support redevelopment of Braeburn Chatham Apartments in the amount of $19,500,000, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Racinus?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Now move on to committee action item number four, which is the recommendation for preliminary approval of financing for Living East Bay, located in Bristol and Warren. And let's see who's, oh, Jeff Swanson. Thank you, Jeff. I have stay confused when I try to follow this. Jeff, you're going to present.
Great. Good morning. Nice to see everyone, some of you anyway, live and in person. And this is Jeff Swanson, Development Officer of Rhode Island Housing. As was just introduced, we are here to request preliminary commitment of a tax-exempt construction loan of $4.75 million for the Living East Bay apartments. In addition, we are seeking a taxable permanent loan of $430,000 and a capital magnet fund loan of $785,000. This request is as a result of a 4% low-income housing tax credit application for Living East Bay submitted by the East Bay CDC. This project is currently two separate, very kind of loose portfolios comprised of nine buildings, and they're located on eight tax lots, primarily in Bristol, Rhode Island, with one building in Warren. There are 47 apartments, and they range in size between one and four bedrooms. The units themselves have received some attention over the years, and they are typically in average to good condition. While the buildings are probably in the best average condition with some deferred maintenance in evidence. The developer's preliminary construction budget is $2.3 million, or nearly $49,000 a unit. Their focus will be really on the common area elements, things like windows, roofs, boilers, but they have an allowance to complete unit upgrades on an as-needed basis. The individual properties are currently encumbered by $2,250,000 of soft debt with accrued interest. The developer anticipates asking for some or all of the interest and perhaps some of the principal to be written off. This calculation they are working through with the syndicator and will be part of their residual calculation. We note that 35 of the 47 apartments have either a mobile or a project-based voucher, which is an incredibly high and unusual number. But I would like to point out that we have not considered the mobile voucher rents for underwriting. The project is underwritten to the lowest of market or the various program rents that currently encumber the property. We've also already started working with an independent appraisal firm, and to aid in the underwriting that you have before you, they provided us with an as-is value of the project, which we've used to in our underwriting to determine the acquisition basis and therefore the acquisition credits. It's noted in the write-ups, underwriting conforms to all of our standard requirements with the exception of the second component of the bridge loan. This is not unusual for a 4% project. And I do note that we are and will underwrite and issue the minimum amount of the construction loan required, but we are required to meet the 50% test. So that's a general overview. Any questions, thoughts?
Can you tell us more about the developer?
It's a I had asked Ann to help me fill in a few of the blanks because this is the first time I've worked with them. They have done a number of projects in recent years. Their executive director is a woman named Diane Medeiros. She's been with East Bay for approximately 2 years. They are nearly through a HUD assisted living project that they're doing directly with HUD, and they most recently with us are just closing out Palmer Point. How are you, Ann?
Good morning, this is Ann Furman. I mean, they're a longstanding CDC in the East Bay, covering Bristol, Warren, Barrington. As Jeff said, they just finished their second 9% tax credit deal, which both of which are in Barrington. They own a couple of 202s. They've owned an assisted living, a low-income housing tax credit assisted living facility that we financed back in 1999. They're in the process of refinancing that through HUD. So, you know, they have the staff and the balance sheet. I mean, they're not necessarily looking to go beyond the East Bay, but they are a strong presence in the East Bay.
Thank you.
A couple of questions. So the existing debt that's being rolled over is $2.7 million in principal, or is that principal plus accrued interest?
Either it's $2,250,000, and that is only principal. This is a real patchwork of financing. There are approximately 30 individual soft loans. The honest truth is we are still researching what the accrued interest is. Some of these are essentially grants, and the vast majority of these loans are not on our system. So the interest calculation is done by digging out the old loan documents and calculating it manually. We'll plan to have more detail on that and what they propose when they come back for a firm. That's what I know now based on their financials and research we were able to
acquire. I'm hoping that's pretty unusual that these wouldn't be in the system. If they're housing loans?
Well, yeah, I'll let Carol or Ann talk to it, but if they're grants, essentially formulated as grants, I don't think that's terribly unusual.
This was never a tax credit deal previously. And as Jeff said, I think, you know, there's literally over the past 25 or 30 years, they would acquire these one-off buildings with home funds or...
Right.
Probably BBC block grant money, and over the years they have sort of created these pods of housing, and now they're bringing them together in one complete refinance. And so some of them were grants. We may not have even issued that grant. It could have been the town of Bristol, for example, providing the CDBG. So we are in the process of.
Okay.
We know what we have on our system, but as Jeff said, they're working with the cities and towns to potentially release some of the existing non-deferred 0% interest debt that has been on the property for many years.
Right.
Generally, we will encumber just to ensure long-term affordability. So many of these can probably be extinguished through the process.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Lead loans
were
put on the property,
things
like that. Right. Okay. We've also requested as part of that process the title rundown.
Right. Okay. And then the $4,250,000 acquisition seems hard to believe that we'd get an appraisal if it can only support $430,000 in hard debt that it's going to appraise at $4.25 million.
Well, the. Vast majority of the programs that Carol just referenced have run through their regulatory period, so they are continuing to operate these as affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
But about two-thirds of the properties that, when we dug into it, are not currently encumbered other than by the Rhode Island Housing extended affordability on some of them. So the reality is we were able to appraise it at market rents, which is a large part of, I think, the collective motivation to do this transaction.
And so what is the $4,250,000 that's going to pay off this, what's shown above is $2,700,000 in us assumed debt. So what about the remaining $1.5 million?
It will be in the form of the rollover debt.
So the full $4,250,000 is essentially rollover debt? I'm trying to see if is there money that is going in the sponsor's pocket out of that acquisition? Okay.
There is some hard debt on the property either to us or to a third party bank, and those senior loans that are currently amortizing will be paid off.
Okay. And then Jeff, I understand for the bridge loan, it's going to be really, really hard on this one. But what measures are being put in place to mitigate the repayment risk to us?
Well, there's certainly the first one will be that they will be required to put in the 15% equity at closing. There will be the construction completion guarantee, which again is part of our standard process, so the debt will be recourse for that period. I would say those are the two primary.
We will also typically take an assignment of the construction contract, the architect's contract, and be engaged in helping to oversee construction.
And an assignment of the developer fee and
absolutely.
Right, and all that from the tax credit investor. Can we get 20%? I thought it was 20 up front. Is it 15? Is
it's 15.
Okay.
I believe that they're still negotiating with Redstone, so we'll take a look at that.
Okay.
We'll ask. I mean, as you well know, there's a balancing act between
sure,
the
I understand.
And the pricing.
I understand.
Okay. Do you believe the sponsoring have ambition? Have enough to do this all together, but they have ambition going forward.
Well,
I
think
geography when you
I think in the same geography, I think they're always looking for opportunities. They do have an identity of interest management company, so it's important for them in this particular case, you know, these 47 units are taking up a lot of management time right now because they, you know, they're let's just say well used properties. So this is going to help both the operations, physical, financial. I think that if they found the right opportunity, they would absolutely move forward with probably another 9% project. I think they, as far as I know, they don't have something specific in mind, but I think they're always looking.
Okay.
Any other questions, Liz?
They were all answered.
Okay. May I request a motion to provide preliminary approval of financing for Living East Benny?
Second.
Great. And any other further comments or questions? Hearing none. Corinne, would you please take a roll call vote?
Sure. This is Corinne Myers speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending preliminary approval of financing for Living East Bay in Bristol and Warren, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Ritsinas.
Aye.
Director Tanner.
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Now we turn to committee action item number 5, which is recommendation for approval of transfer of physical assets for Riverstone Apartments located in Pawtucket. Ann? Great.
Good morning. This is Ann Berman. So this request for action is an administrative action required under our general rules governing multifamily loan programs. We are requesting approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Riverstone Apartments which is an affordable housing development located in Pawtucket. And as a reminder, in November of 2020, the board approved the general partner transfer of the same property to an affiliate of the Standard Property Company. It has taken a while to get here, and in the process, the limited partner, whose approval was needed for the general partner approval, determined that this was an opportune time for them to transfer their interest as well. These are 103 units for disabled individuals and seniors, 60 over the age of 62, and there are seven buildings. They're all encumbered by a HAP contract, and the regulatory agreement is in place until 2053. And Standard Property, on behalf of the owners, requested our approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest from affiliates of Michael Associates to a LIHTC investment fund managed by the Candor Group, which is based in Boston. After the transfer of both the general partner and the limited partner interest, the original GP, which is Blackstone Valley, an affiliate of Blackstone Valley ARC, will remain as the general partner and retain a very small ownership interest. And that is because these are all 202 projects. So we're asking approval of the following: the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Riverside Apartments from Countryside Corporate Tax Credits 21 Limited Partnership and Michael Properties LLC to Community Development and Affordable Housing Fund 5 and CS Fund 1 Riverstone SPE Owner LLC.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Can you repeat that, please?
I'd rather not.
Is there a motion to approve this TPA of Riverstone Apartments? So moved.
Seconded.
Any comments or questions about this action? No. No comments or questions from me either. So, Corinne, would you please take a roll call vote?
Certainly. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of a transfer of physical assets for Riverstone Apartments in Pawtucket as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Ritsinas?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great, thank you. We'll now move on to our final action item on the agenda, which is the recommendation for approval of the final 2022 qualified allocation plan. And Ann Berman will be presenting.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. As you recall, at the June 17 board meeting, the board approved a the draft of the 2022 QAP, and we are here today to present the final QAP. After the board meeting, the public notice was published in two newspapers as well as on our website. A public hearing was held, and we received written comments from several parties. So what you have before you today is a black line of the approved draft from June. And I will briefly summarize some of the more substantive changes that we've made since the draft. Based on feedback, we did add a glossary of acronyms as well as a table of contents, which I think will be most welcome. In section two, we've increased the absolute TDC cap from $385,000 to $390,000. And this is specifically a result of us working with our design and construction team to quantify the cost increases associated with each of the building types that are now in the QAP. And after we did the research, it looks like sort of industry-wide, and particularly in New England, that the changes in the market are somewhere between 6.6% and 8%, so we've basically used a 7% factor on all of our building types to come up with sort of unweighted TDC amounts And so as a result of that, one of the amounts was over $385,000, so we're bumping the absolute TDC cap in the QAP to $390,000.
Excuse me, but also removing the capitalized reserves, which is probably what, another 5 to 10 a unit?
You know, it depends, but yes, I think that's a...
Okay.
I will go back and double check what that amount is, but yes, they are
in that ballpark.
Right.
And I think it does give some more flexibility within our cap while allowing us to have some cost containment. So
right.
The development community, which it was their suggestion to begin with, we're very happy that we
sure.
made that change. It's something they've been advocating for a while, and I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
The next change that is worth noting is we've deleted the requirement for 5 years of low-income housing tax credit experience for developers. Specifically, commenters were concerned that the specific 5-year requirement was limiting and unfairly penalized developers who have significant real estate experience but may not have specific affordable experience through the LIHTC and or the Section 8 program. So we reviewed the requirement for the developer team capacity and determined that we have a variety of metrics within the text that allows us to evaluate whether the developer and their team have the requisite experience to undertake a project of the proposed size and scope. So we think that the requirement for 5 years was a little onerous and therefore could be deleted. Kevin mentioned, we've eliminated the capitalized reserves from the TDC, and there was a second reference in the QAP that needed to be modified to accommodate that. We did modify the building types, and I just want to note that there was actually a typo that will need to be corrected. The garden-style non-elevator buildings should be 3 stories, not 4 stories. The next change is that we deleted the proposed additional points for larger units. And again, this was a response to several commenters who were concerned that the incentive for larger units is actually already included in the weighted average calculation that we do for both total development cost and low-income housing tax credits. In addition, recent studies have identified a need for housing units in Rhode Island across all bedroom sizes and income bands. And so staff, after reviewing, agreed that the market really should be the determinant as to what a developer should build, and additional points for larger units is not necessary. In the same genre of comments, there was a request to add a specific priority for elderly housing. And after reviewing, staff determined that because affordable housing is really universally needed across the state, again, in all unit sizes, across all household sizes, across all ages, that this priority was not necessary in this year's QAP. One last item I wanted to highlight was a clarification around the qualified nonprofit being part of a joint venture. The expectation is that the nonprofit will have a meaningful role and have at least a 50% ownership interest in the property in order to qualify for those points. The remaining changes are essentially qualifications. Happy to answer any questions, but we are requesting approval of the 2022 QAP with the additional correction around the building, the typo in the non-elevator building, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'd like to start out just with a review of the process, I think, and the role of the board here with approving of the QAP. So it comes before the board, or our committee at least, twice. Is that correct? Okay. First it comes with the draft, and we can make comments on it and propose some changes, and then it goes out to the public. And then a new draft is created, and then it comes back to us for formal approval or recommendation to approve to the board.
Staff recommendation to the board to approve the final QAP, which is what we're here for today.
Okay. So we may have comments or requests of changes to the QAP. Is it possible to make those at this point, or is it kind of set in stone right now?
We do get the second bite of the apple at the board meeting, so it's possible, it seemed maybe possible to lay out, to discuss what possible amendments could be, and then reacting to the staff and their input, it could be re-voted on at the regular board meeting.
Okay.
The opportunity for posting in between.
Corinne, do you want to weigh in on this?
This is Corinne speaking. If I understood the chairman's comment, a subsequent vote of the board would to be required following those changes. Chairman, is that the nature of your comment?
I'm not sure if it is, but I wanted to make a change, but have that change go through the process. We could get a chance to comment on it, public a chance to comment on the interim, and the staff can massage it if necessary, but then post it with the regular posting for the next board meeting.
This is Corinne Myers. Yes, Chairman, I agree with you that would be a process that would honor our obligations to the public as well as give staff time to make the changes and present the summary of written comments to the board.
Okay, thank you.
Just so I'm clear, Corinne, we have an obligation if we make changes today to repost this qualified allocation plan for public comment, take those comments in, evaluate those comments, and then take it back to the board, which I don't think can be achieved for the August board meeting. That would push us into September.
Is that a bad thing?
No, I just want clarification.
That's fine.
Yeah. Does that make sense, Corinne?
Yes, Carol, I agree that would be the course of action.
So that would, what would be the overall delay versus, you know, in getting the final out to the public and applying for it, or would there be?
Yeah, it would be a delay.
Right, so after you approve it, it has to go to the governors for signature, and that is likely to take 30 days. So our goal was to have the approval in August, have the governor's signature by the end of September so we could post our RFP for 2022 credits on or about September 30th. My guess is this would push us back 30 days, which would, you know, pushes the whole process back 30 days.
Okay.
So applications would be due in later in January as opposed to in December.
Okay. Something to keep in mind if we want to make a change to it. Okay.
I think the point, I do want to emphasize the point the chairman made. We as a board need to have discretion in making a decision. All decisions can't be yay or nay. Look at that. I want to make sure that we have, if we agree on a change, then we agree on a change. It's not yay or nay.
And all or nothing.
All or nothing, yeah.
Right. Right.
Otherwise, we just phone in our ballots.
Right. Right.
You don't need to discuss.
I guess we'll have to see how we can fit that in with the public comment period and all of that too.
Well, I think that opportunity exists at the preliminary stage,
right,
that any changes that the board may want to see or this committee may want to see is incorporated at that point, because then it gets posted with the rest of the changes, right, for the public comment, and then by the time we get here, it's pretty much a locked up document.
Yeah. Understood. Okay. Well, I think we talked about all that. Should we dive into specific questions or comments?
Well, the specific comment is there is a particular change I, for one, would like to see. I've chatted with all of you about it. No secret, it has to do with giving more credence to fair housing and areas of opportunity, I think it's called, and like. And the second had to do with broadband access, farming broadband access, and any multifamily property with finance, with understanding if it poses a financial hardship, they'd have an appeal process with the director. There's a patent way on it to endorse it or not endorse it. That's just.
Okay. So I'm sorry. So for the area of opportunity,
I'm told that's right. That's the right phrase.
That is the right phrase. And I, just to give some background for the committee, we had engaged in some work on fair housing prior to the preliminary phase. We had an intern from Brown last year who did some great work, and I think Kevin, you said in on some of the presentation that she made about exactly how to target groups that we wanted to, that were in disadvantaged areas, and promote development in areas of opportunity for folks, to, whether it's better schools, access to transportation, access to jobs, all of those things. And I think the work that we did really informed how we conceived of it with this QAP. And I think it, you know, we kind of vetted it through the development community. We talked a lot about it, and it, it has resulted in a much better approach, I think, in, than in previous QAPs. So I think we've done a better job of weighting things the way that we feel like they ought to be, and, you know, incentivizing development in traditionally lower developed areas, because we actually got some feedback from some developers who said we were, you know, incentivizing building in the suburbs, it was disadvantaging people in the cities. So to me, if we're getting that feedback, we've done something right in terms of what we were trying to achieve.
Right, and we only have three deals a year anyway.
We do only have three deals a year.
And I would point out, so that the, just collectively, right, so we if you're putting it in a community that is less than 10%, which I think, by and large, most of us would agree is likely meets the definition of an area of opportunity, you get 10 points. Then we've added 2 points for the schools, as well as adding points for certain communities within, or certain census tracts within exempt communities. So for example, if one were to build, say, on the east side of Providence, right now, the way the QAP is written, or the way it has been written before this proposed draft, was there would be no points because Providence is an exempt community. So we've basically, and again, this was feedback from one of our developers who said, you know, and they may or may not ever build in that community, but within those exempt communities, there are pockets of higher census tracts, and so we should be, you know, sort of thoughtful about placement. And that was actually a direct result of there are points under the Federal Home Loan Bank of Boston's AHP application that are also sort of focused on those down to the census tract. And so we thought that was a useful change. So just, you know, kind of wanted to point out that there are a fair number of points right now within that category.
The only thing that I would, this is Carol Ventura, the only thing I will mention is that heavily weighting points in communities like Barrington and Bristol creates rental opportunities in those communities, but it leaves behind the communities that need revitalization, like Central Falls. So I think as an agency, as staff, and as a board, we have to balance the needs of Central Falls, where the mayor is laser focused on creating decent housing, right, for the people of Central Falls, with wanting to create more opportunities in places like Barrington, other areas of the city. So it's a very fine balance, and I think the staff does an incredible job balancing those priorities within the community. So I'm concerned if we weight it too heavily to census tracts that we deem as an opportunity, we leave behind other important areas of the city.
How would you quantify maybe this shift in the proposed QAP? Is it a minor shift to maybe favor the Barringtons of the state, or is it a large shift right now to do that, or maybe no shift?
I think it's a small shift. And what I would say to Carol's point is, over the last, and we can go back and look this and really quantify it for you, but if you look at the awards that have been made over the last 5 years since we really started this very specific scoring project, we've done a really good job of providing awards in both urban core areas that we're focused on revitalizing, as well as those suburban communities, and in a couple of cases, rural communities that we've never been able to serve before. So I think the QAP on balance does a good job, and then it's really up to the developers in those communities to find the opportunities and then prepare an application that you know, balances all of the things we're trying to accomplish in the QAP.
Let's understand, Carol's right, it's balance, it makes sense of balance. But at some point, the board has an obligation, but an obligation to look at it and put their thumb on the scale. 1 point out of how many points in the whole?
133,
yes.
Give or take.
So it's less than 1%. It's a singling kind of device. It's not going to change whether something is built in Central Falls or Barrington. There are other factors that will affect that. It'll never end up just that being the reason for doing it overall. And I just think it's something I believe in very strongly, as you all do, about fair housing, areas of opportunity. And I always use the last dollar test. If I have $1 left, I'm interested in community development, interested in children having a place to go to school, where would I spend that dollar? I think it's building low-income housing in, God forbid, Barrington, Portsmouth, whatever the case may be. It's a signaling kind of question. This is important to us. This is very important to us.
I would agree with your comments, Nick. I think if we have a choice, that's the direction I would like to take, too. I would clarify, though, that it is more than 1 point out of 133, and I think it's, I mean, there's probably, what, 5 to 9 or something in the
12,
area, plus the 10 of the...
could be as much as...
15 or something on that order.
10 plus 2, plus if you look at some of the transportation stuff, probably 13 or 14 points. Mm-hmm. And which is actually quite a lot, especially when you look at this year. You guys might remember this. I think there was less than 1 point that separated the first and the second awards. And then there was a gap. And then the third and the fourth were again within 1 point. So they do go, you know, we do provide fraction. We score based on the fraction of the point if we need to.
I would also just ask the committee to consider the opportunity cost of making this change at this time. That we will, as we discussed, move the process back a month. And given the other monies that are going to be invested in affordable housing, the timeliness of bringing these projects forward, it's a very unique period of time because of the resources we're going to see. I would be hesitant to delay the process for any length of time because other projects will be getting into the queue and receiving other monies. I think
sure.
We just need to think about making it at this point, whether it's the month that we would delay into next year is the appropriate trade-off. I don't disagree in any way with the chairman's desire to send a message about certain social goals we want to achieve, but it's just process-wise, is this the right?
If you are delaying or opening up to different opportunities, that's a good thing to happen. We're just part of a club of possibilities coming forward. There'll be a lot of money coming to the state that's freestanding, doesn't go through, I don't know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to make sure the focus on fair housing, areas of opportunity, is appropriate here.
Well, I think it's safe to say that the broadband access piece.
Yeah.
You know.
It's my second, right?
But the timing for that is now. We can't wait a year for that. So with the dollars that are coming forth from that, now's the opportunity to make that change.
This does, this is a point, this does tilt the scale a little bit. More to this area of opportunity. It's 1 out of 100 points. How many points? How many points in the whole?
132 points.
Okay. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Mr. Chairman, I'm having a hard time hearing you on the over the telephone, if you would kindly speak up.
Okay, I'll try to.
In regard to the broadband, so this year we did add points, and the one clarification we're making here is that the free broadband is for only would be required for the affordable units. But I just want to step back and remind folks that under our design and construction guidelines, every unit is required to be wired for internet. The challenge, and we have run these numbers a number of different ways, is that the cost to provide the hardware is really not prohibitive. That doesn't break the bank on any project. The challenge is the operation cost going forward. And we actually have a real example of what that costs, because we're in the process of, working on Oxford Family Housing, which is in the South Providence neighborhood. And the new development, which was 30 units, is going to provide wireless to both that development as well as 128 units that are sort of on the same parcel of land. The syndicator was able to sort of come up with, I think I'm going to use round numbers, approximately $350,000 of additional equity. About $100,000 of it is for the hardware. The other $250,000 of it, I can't do this math in my head, is basically $32,000 a year that will come in annually to support the operational cost of that. Without that injection of $32,000 a year, they could not afford to provide it. And I think the challenge in terms of, and you know, I think in a perfect world, we would all want exactly what you're asking, that would be required. My fear is that every single applicant will ask for the waiver because it's not financially feasible for us to require them to have to pay for it at the cost, whether it's $25,000 or $32,000 a year. Many of these are, you know, if they don't have a Section 8 contract, the operating margin is so thin, you know, they even with no debt, I'm not sure that they could afford to carry the cost. And so from an operations standpoint, I think every single applicant would ask for a waiver.
Or instead, they could also look at the same thing that Liz looked at, which is the incoming money for broadband, and try to be the first ones to the door for that money. They don't have to take it out of the project itself.
Well, that would depend on what those resources would be.
Absolutely.
And based on what we've seen, it's not for service.
Yeah. And I apologize for bringing this up at the last minute. I didn't focus on it earlier, so may I call for that?
And I believe this inclusion of this point item for providing the free service was a suggestion in last year's QAP, correct? And it kind of got shot down by
the advocates, by the stakeholders.
Right. So it wasn't even that they wanted to have to pay for it. They just didn't even want it as a point item. They didn't want it as a, you know, let alone being mandatory, they didn't want it even as a point item. So this isn't the full step forward, but it is a step, I think.
Well, and
in the right direction.
I'm sorry. And I think if it's in the QAP like this, we will see how many in the next round, whether or not folks try and avail themselves of that, because it's one thing to get the points, but they have to show us in their projections how they're going to pay for it. So it'll
right.
be interesting to see if they are able to actually apply for the points and then actually get them.
I agree. I think it's going to push developers to get more creative about how they can provide this service at a lower cost, because that $30,000 a year is obscene. I mean, they should be able to push that cost way down. If our average unit size is maybe 50, or what our property size maybe 50 units, I think they should be able to get that down to $10 a unit, maybe $20 a unit, you know, per month. So you're talking, what is that, $6,000 to $12,000 a year for an average, you know, apartment property of 50 units. So I think that it's a smaller amount than maybe others are throwing out there right now, but it's going to take some beating by that developer, because normally they've just left it up to the tenants to take care of that on their own, and they're having to pay $75 or whatever it is a month. But if you get somebody with some larger clout that can pull it together and has the motivation, because we're telling them to do that, I think we're going to bring those costs down. But also at the end of the day, a lot of these projects have soft money in them, right, from us. So if we're pulling money out of operations, that means we're going to be throwing more money and soft funds into these deals. So it ultimately is going to come to us that are going to be paying for the service.
The struggle we have now is that broadband service is an actual utility but treated as a luxury.
Yeah.
By regulation and by practice. So while we acknowledge the necessity of it for people to go to school, to go to work, to do what have you, there exists in many of the communities in Rhode Island a monopoly. So there's no incentive for a Verizon or a Cox to give you any break because either you want it or you don't. And that's, we've had discussions, you know, as part of the conversation, larger conversations with the state, with Verizon particularly, not to throw them under the bus, but, and they had no interest in working on a reduced price product because there's no merit to it for them. And so while I agree with you, you should be able, if you have a weight of customers, to be able to drive that down, absent competition or absent any regulation that compels that competition, you really don't have leverage in the way that you should. And so I think, you know, we have to look at the $32,000 number as the right number because that's the only game in town, unfortunately. I think over time that will change. I think over time people will begin to realize it is a utility. As I discussed with the chairman yesterday, if it were a utility, we would be able to give a utility allowance on the rent, as we do, you know, as developments do with electricity or with heating. But that's not the case right now because it's still considered a luxury, even though factually that's not true.
How old is that information? Because that is not my understanding of late with what Cox has proposed for affordable housing units.
Again, the conversations we had were earlier this year, so I don't recall exactly when. But if you have information on what Cox has proposed, that would be great to hear.
4 or 5. We'll get you some more.
Thank you.
There was Comcast, isn't it?
No. No, we are in Rhode
It's
Island.
Cox and Verizon, pretty much.
Okay. But they both, didn't Cox and Verizon have agreements with school systems and others in the state?
It's extremely complicated what the relationship is.
Okay.
It's extremely complicated. However, it is my understanding that that some of those services were willing to provide a lower cost option around the $25 range.
Right. Okay. Thanks. We need to put it on the back on the developers to really push hard on that. Any other comments?
I'd like to see. I think we have an obligation not only to manage the operations, oversee the operations here, but also be signaling what's a priority and what's important to us. Hopefully that matches up with some of the state activities in the same way. And again, I do apologize for the clumsiness which I introduced this in terms of just being asleep at the switch one afternoon. I don't really maybe take a nap, whatever wasn't available. But I do think it's important. I want to be the one who says yes to broadband access or whatever. And it's not the one who says not now or maybe next time. Everyone agree. I don't have to convince anybody here about the merits of doing it. That's not the issue.
So I just want to clarify. What you're suggesting is that we take the points out of the QAP and just basically require developers to provide broadband to all of the residents.
The PL that are getting that waived.
I'm sorry, Nick. What was that?
The PL that. Putting it on your back,
or
wave it, saying, "Oh, this one's really important. The margins are so thin. This we can't play around with this one at all." You have that opportunity.
Is it providing the wiring and the equipment, but not the service fee?
I'd like to broadly define, include the service fee, not necessarily require. Could be part of a universal access.
And can the language be written loose enough that it doesn't necessarily have to be per unit, it could be per building?
I just want to be clear, because when we did change this last time, was that the language was too broad and people didn't understand what we were asking for. So I think if we're going to make a change, we have to be as specific as possible so people understand what they're applying for.
Right.
And to be clear, our design guidelines already require all the wiring for hardwired, not necessarily for wireless. So I just want to be clear. You're suggesting take the points out of the QAP and then just build it into our developer's handbook that it's a requirement along with that the provision of the service by the owner of the property, whether it's hardwired or broadband is their responsibility.
Yes. Again, with the opportunity for you to reflect on that in terms of specific language, we're not in the language writing business. We'll leave that up to you.
I think then we would, again, I'm not trying to overcomplicate this, but I'm just trying to think through the consequences. If we require it, we will have to change our operating cost assumptions under the QAP and increase them.
And this would apply to both 4% and 9% transactions?
I'd like them.
So every tax credit transaction?
The world is changing. This is becoming a must-have.
Sure.
And if we're going to help our residents, we need to give them all tools that can help them move forward.
Do we have enough information to make a final determination?
Would you like more information on what
projection? Not necessarily for me, but it feels like we don't know enough about what the full scenario is and how it should be worked.
I mean, it's not an industry we work in, right? We're very good at affordable housing.
Right.
And we've gotten very good at underwriting deals. We don't play in the broadband space. It's not an area that we operate in, and, you know.
I'm a big fan of always saying, what are other governments doing? Are there other governments that are making this kind of requirement? Other states?
States are dipping their toe in the water and providing points, and that's, we've sort of modeled our points after what some other states are doing. Virginia has the sort of the same metrics, right? Community room versus individual units. They provide more points, but there's more points in their QAP overall. We've thrown this out on the listserv a number of times over the last couple of years. We ask it at conferences. It's a cost issue. So the states have been very reticent to, I don't know any state that has mandated what the chairman is asking for. They do provide points in the QAP for these kind of incremental steps.
So is this, and maybe Corinne, you could step in here, should we have this as a separate maybe item for the committee to kind of vote on and to approve up to the board, or is this just a further discussion at the board level?
Mr. Committee Chairman, what is the intention to postpone the item until next month pending staff's insertion of certain changes into the QAP?
No, I think my question was, do we have a vote or offer the board some guidance, I guess, from the committee level about the chairman's request to make internet service a mandatory element of the QAP?
With relief, possibly.
With potential waiver relief by the executive director.
And can I just, a clarification? So the QAP references the developer's handbook, which we work on kind of once the changes are made to the QAP, we implement those into the, that's where that would be. You wouldn't actually see it in the QAP, you'd see it in
right.
the developer's handbook.
Right, because it'd be a mandatory design and construction item.
The operating costs, and
right.
we look at that over the,
right.
between now and September 30th and make those changes.
If I'm not mistaken, and Corey, please weigh in if I'm off base. I believe it would take a motion of this committee to recommend additional changes to the qualified allocation plan for us to go back, make those changes, repost it, and then we would have to bring it back to committee at a later date. Is that correct, Corey?
Yes, Carol, that would work.
Okay. So,
I would like to move the two areas, talk about the change in the area of opportunity, the change in broadband access.
So, and should we take those separately? Yeah, or it doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is for further discussion, or are we voting to make the change?
This would be to vote to make the recommend that this change be made up to the board level for the entire board to vote. Is it?
I feel like I need more information before I. especially for the only state that would make some of those
okay.
changes.
What would be helpful for you, Liz, in terms of information that we can collect for you?
Well, you know, I certainly agree with the chairman about, you know, the natural purpose, but if we are the only air state, that makes me question what the cost is then to the developer and whether it's worth it or not. You know, if some of these units are entirely senior housing and they don't ever tap into it, we put on an added cost for no reason. So I just need some more information to satisfy that curiosity piece.
And I think some of the states have made more progress on this. I don't think we're the file carrier.
No, I think that they do provide points in the QAP to incentivize. To my knowledge, nobody is mandating both the hardware and the actual cost of the operations on an ongoing basis. That's the piece that I think has not been mandated in some other states.
And is there a collective approach that you're talking about the community rooms? Is there a way to essentially give it the unit, the building pays for it, and it just becomes part of anyone's rent?
So right now, the way the QAP is written, we're providing, we give 1 point if you provide it in the community room, and then 2 points if it's within each, everybody gets sort of a wireless in the residential. I think it's also interesting to note, and I think it was one of you who shared this with me, that in Olleyville, right, so they've got the big net over Olleyville, and many of the residents, while it's a terrific idea, the residents have been very reticent to use it because of privacy concerns, right? So when you put a net there, it's a public system, right? And I'm the least techie person I know, but people, you know, maybe you could do your homework on it, but I think you're limited in terms of your privacy. And that's, so as a result, people aren't using it to the degree that they expected, and it was a pretty significant expense, if I understand, $250,000 or so.
Yeah. And I think that given the broad range of our developments, so we have some developments that clearly have community rooms in a building, in a single building. So access to the community room and Wi-Fi is easier than a development that has 20 scattered site properties, right? And then you're pretty much reliant upon wiring that three-unit building and each individual tenant purchasing their own internet access and cable bundle, so to speak. I think I don't think there's a lot of cost savings in acquiring just internet based on my conversations with Daniela, because we have monthly calls with the office of the station. Based on our conversation, there's not a lot of incentive for someone to just take internet, right, versus getting a bundle. It's more cost effective to bundle. It's like $30 just for an internet. So it's not, you know, even with cost-saving products out there, I think it's something called Lifeline that's $10 or something a month. It's not reliable. It's not reliable access to the internet. So we're really not in a place yet where we've come up with a good solution in the state for lower income people to access internet. And I think it's going to be a while before we do. And a lot of the focus with, which is an incredible amount of money being put aside for broadband, I think a lot of the focus of those dollars would be on areas of the state, and there are areas of the state that have no connectivity at all, and running those lines to those areas so that people have the option of connecting. And also on public housing authorities, there is a focus on public housing.
The other consideration, to your point, Director Tanner, is that there's differing levels of need across the portfolio. So a senior building is going to have less need than a family housing development with kids who may need it for school, people who may need it for work. It's you know, we always see this tension, and Ann referenced it before, in terms of the bedroom size, the tension between people who want to develop elderly housing, who want to develop family housing, that each one generally thinks the other is being advantaged somehow by the QAP. And so, you know, to set up something that they may perceive as inequitable as well, if it's a compulsion to provide broadband, it's another consideration that we have to take into effect.
I want to allow, as I counter them by saying, I think it's not unimportant for Rhode Island Housing to be a leader in this. That's not a bad place to be.
No.
Leaders sometimes get people run over them because they're not always perfect. It's a way of saying, putting a mark in the sand, saying, this is where we stand. Help us figure it out. Give you some little rope, a little bit more rope during that first year or two. But not required, but just move in that direction.
Well, and I do think we've done a good job with that with, you know, the with the broadband grant program. I don't know many other HFAs that have rolled out some product like that. I think we can be very proud of that. And I think we'll have more success as we go forward with that because of the type of response we got and the creativity of the responses.
And my fire extinguisher is the executive director.
So, Chairman, that was a motion that you made. That was a motion you made. I didn't hear a second.
Well, I heard Liz asking for more information, so I didn't want to. I didn't want to push that, but I think it's fair to maybe offer my opinions on it too. If we're not going to take maybe a formal vote on that, is on the issue of the internet access. I completely agree that it has become an essential item. I think and we. To provide for lower income families so that they aren't left behind in yet another area. The way to get there, I'm not sure about. I think that providing it as a point category in this year's QAP, that is where I believe is the right thing to do for now. And then hopefully that can drive some innovation, and then maybe the next step will be making it mandatory. That would be my take on it. And the areas of opportunity, I think this version of the QAP has made some good strides in this area. I would also like to see more emphasis on it going forward, however. I think, and we can better align maybe that section, there is a discussion, I think it was on page 48 of the black line, that lays out access to jobs, low poverty rates, close proximity to healthcare. I think that we could maybe incorporate those metrics into the actual point categories better than we, as opposed to, I think there's mixed income, there's mixed use. I think we can maybe more directly hit it and maybe give it some more points. But to me, those are maybe a little larger structural changes that I would suggest we maybe push through for next year. So I guess on that front as well, I would not, vote for giving it more greater points right now or big structural changes right now. Also, I'd like to add, I think these are clerical changes, so maybe we could get those in, but in that same section, it's the transportation subcategory. It just says development is within 1/2 mile of bus. So I think we want to say a bus stop with regularly scheduled service.
I will look for that.
Moving there. You benefit from some specificity there.
Yes, I agree.
And same thing for a quarter mile. We also, I don't know, there aren't that many locations, but we might want to add train station. Certainly, in addition to a bus,
more.
Bus station.
Certainly Central Falls and Pawtucket, that's going to be a concern pretty shortly.
Right, right. Or even down at Wickford Junction or something like that.
Corey, if I make those clarifications, would that require reposting, or if it's just sort of some word cleanup?
This is Corey speaking. Anne, if the motion is made to recommend the approval of the 2022 QAP with the typo that you described earlier corrected and with these two changes to the transportation section, it can be presented to the board with those changes cleaned up.
But
I'm sorry, one other minor one is there is also in that same section, it says a point for bicycle storage. I'm a developer, I know how to get around little things like that, so I could have storage for one bicycle, and I get my point. So.
I can assure you that we would never let.
But I wouldn't do that, no. But there are other.
Some colleagues of yours, right?
Think of doing something like that.
Okay, I will.
So I don't know if it's, there should be some ratio, obviously, I don't know, one per 10 units or whatever it is. But again, I think as we're putting these, I think the emphasis was on putting new items in, but maybe we just need to take another set of eyes to make sure it's specific.
Thank you.
Significant purchase.
Would this committee feel better if we just waited a month to make this decision, for you to spend more time looking at it and for us to explore more of the chairman's ideas?
I guess that would be, I don't need to spend another, but certainly if you two do, I think that would be something that we could.
I'd be very supportive of that. Let's try to get it as right as we possibly can. Let's get it done at the same time.
Okay. So there'll be a motion to work on, provide more information, also make some changes, and to come back within a month's time with those.
30 days, right.
Okay. There's motion. So moved?
Second.
Seconded? Can we take a roll call on that motion?
Yes, this is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of holding the final 2022 qualified allocation plan for further study, say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Retsinas?
Aye.
Director Tanner?
Aye.
The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Great.
Liz, can I ask a couple of questions on information that was solicited from our HFA partners? Are any other HFAs requiring broadband? That's one, correct, for their tax credit development. Who offers point, the number of HFAs that are offering points and what that scale looks like? And who does not have any reference at all in the qualified allocation plan for broadband?
I guess I'd also, does it affect the margin, like how does it affect the developer? Does it increase the cost significantly? I don't know if we know the answer to that clearly or not, but.
Well, we can try to quantify that. I mean, I think it depends on the development and the developer.
Does it increase the cost of what they charge?
I think, you know, in my mind, there would be a natural migration for everyone in the development to then expect the developer to pay for it, right? It's not going to be one individual who unfortunately can't afford it, right? It's going to be everybody in the development that knows that the developer is subsidizing at least one family.
For all the affordable units, think that.
Well, that's typically ideal.
Right.
Now, for clarification.
We don't have.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Anta, the wiring is already required. This is
the
equipment and then ultimately the connection to the service.
This would be the connection to the
service.
Okay. Yeah. They are providing the equipment or they're not providing?
Right now, the units are fully wired for a hard connection.
Yeah. So you don't need a router, you don't need a separate router or anything?
You don't, correct. I mean,
you just plug your TV in, and if you have cable, you get your cable.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so we provide it for television and
data.
Data. Thank you.
And I'll certainly get clarification from Daniela as to the strategies, but we're on those calls monthly, so I think we have a good handle on what those dollars are that are going to flow through Commerce and what they're targeted for. I think there's going to be a lot of money put into planning as well, looking at the state of the whole as to where there are gaps in service and what the service looks like, because your service could be 10 over 1 or 10 and 5 over 3. It all depends on where you live. So. And we are, I want to assure all of you that we are engaged in those conversations. It's just, we have not taken the lead. The Office of Innovation and Commerce is certainly the lead in the state of Ohio.
Then in terms of.
Just one comment. I'm reminded of a quote by one of the early chairmen of the board of General Motors when they were discussing a major acquisition and expansion program. He brought it to the board of directors as chairman of the board And he said, do you have any comments or questions? Nobody said anything. So I guess we're not ready to vote. So now we will be ready to vote.
Yeah, great question. And we'll certainly do a follow-up. You know, things change monthly.
Just to be specific on the areas of opportunity, would it be helpful to show what the proposed number of points are for a proposed project within an area of opportunity, and maybe how many more points you might want to devote to that, or what can really get to that?
I don't know, and I think what gets to it is the substance of doing it. It's not the wordsmithing. I believe the records in that regard.
Sure, but I guess the if we have 133 points, what is the, how much do we want to prioritize that, I suppose? Do we want to make it a slam dunk that every project that gets submitted is going to be in an area of opportunity, or?
I have to look at the, send me a copy of the EWP.
Sure, I think it would be useful. We could also put together the past 5 to 10 years of where we put our projects. You know, I can think we've done 2 in East Greenwich, we've done Barrington, we've done Exeter, Richmond, Charlestown. You know, we've
helped Boroughville get to their 10%.
Right. Right. So I think it's useful. Some, you know, we are already doing some of this, you know, which is good. It's great to be able to be part of that.
I don't know if this would, I know we have that GIS map. I just recently doing a deal in West Virginia, and so it was interesting to see how they're doing things. And one of the things they did is they put together an opportunity index map.
So we added GIS. We're adding GIS mapping
right
to the QAP, and if you fall within those, and I can provide the metrics to you that we're going to map, which I think might be helpful.
Yeah, so subcategory, those opportunity areas. I can provide you with that.
So is that what that one is? It says on the QAP, it says policy map GIS
right
area.
Right, so we're adding that, and we're literally going to, I forgot the name of the company, but literally they are going to go and map those. They have layers of GIS mapping that they can provide to us, and we've sent them, okay, we want you to do these certain metrics. And that will be something that there'll be a link to it, obviously, so people can get to it. But they'll have to, if they fall within those mapped areas, they would get a point in.
So the metrics would be what? High performing schools, low poverty rates, access to transportation, access to healthcare, those basic.
I can send you the list.
Okay. And if you're in it, that would be at the census tract level.
Yeah.
And so if the proposed project is within one of those census tracts, then boom, they get the points.
Yeah. We just did this exercise for a down payment assistance program that will be going to the trustees.
Okay.
And providing $25,000 in down payment assistance to people living in low opportunity areas so that they can buy a home anywhere in the state, including high opportunity.
Okay.
So we did just do that.
Okay. That's helpful. Okay.
We're good. Corinne, this is Liz Tanner. I will be leaving the meeting.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, everyone.
We did have the pipeline on the agenda, but I don't know if you'd like to do that or not.
I think we're losing our audience. Was there anything of real
nothing
note
that
on
that? We need to immediately, if something comes up that
okay
we feel we'll
okay. I am curious about Barbara Jordan. Is there anything?
Oh, well, you missed all the training exercises with the firefighters. Yeah.
Last Wednesday we were out there. It was delightful. We get to see the firefighters did a fake fire, basically, and showed us how they would attack a building that style. It was pretty interesting. It was great. The counselor whose district it resides, Councilor Harris, was there. She was very happy to see the firefighters out there. We have a signed developer agreement as of the other day. I think we have just one. I think you just have the addendum to the PNS is the only other thing we need to execute.
I think we're
executed.
I got executed. Perfect.
I think we're on target. So it's probably going to go to our January board meeting. One of the interesting challenges that I think is coming out of COVID, and I don't know if you're experiencing this in other states, but we talked to some of the commercial banks in Rhode Island, The lead time for appraisals is almost, you know, like 45 working days, which is really pushing our schedules out. And in this case, we need two appraisals, right? Because we've got, and so as a result of that, and then having enough time to review and et cetera, et cetera, we'd like to get to December, but I think we're more comfortable saying January.
Okay. But it's moving along.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And honestly, the firefighters in Providence never have the opportunity to train at sites like this. So they've invited their colleagues from Hartford. So the fire department in Hartford is coming in to train at Barbara.
And are they going to demolish it once they're all done?
Yes. Yeah.
Unfortunately, no.
But you'll get a very nice thank you at the end.
They're just going to poke some holes. And,
oh, geez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
We'll work on getting this information for next month's committee meeting.
Thank you all very much. And again, it's a pleasure to see you all. Awesome.
Do we need to adjourn?
Yeah.
Oh, motion to adjourn.
Do we need a quorum to adjourn?
We don't have a quorum to vote, I think.
Corey, how do you want to handle the adjournment?
Yes, I agree. We have lost our quorum.
We're going to have to stay here all day.
If Committee Chairman Orth and Commissioner Retsinas agree that this meeting is adjourned, we are adjourned.
I'm not sure, Nick.
I'm okay. Let's
all right. Thank you, Corey.
Yeah, we'll
thank you.
Thank you. Let me hit that button.